Hello, you've tuned into Truth News Radio Australia. It's Wednesday, the 9th of December, 2009. And Truth News Radio Australia tonight is brought to you by Big Oil. Yeah, that's right, folks. We have a healthy relationship with a number of sponsors, including ExxonMobil and a few other, you know, unspoken third parties. Who basically maintain us and in the manner to which we're accustomed, and you know, in return for that, we just make up stories about how global warming isn't real. Ha ha. Yeah, well, it ain't so. Basically, that's not the case. We talk about what we feel, and we actually go against many of the people that would otherwise agree with us, and even, you know, allies that would possibly make our lives more interesting. We don't curry favor with anyone. So
no, in fact,
with that introduction,
I can just interject there.
Let's interject away, because that's what we are. We're a radio station that enjoys interjection.
There was a great article on Prison Planet this week. The headline: Big Oil Behind Copenhagen Climate Scam.
Yeah.
Talking basically about how, you know, and this is something we've talked about on this show plenty of times, is a lot of the people behind the green push or the green movement, which are a lot of really good people, but very sort of their knowledge doesn't go very deep. They just sort of follow this religion of climate change instead of actually looking at what's going on, and they always, when someone comes out, they always say, oh, this scientist must be paid by ExxonMobil, or this person must be paid by Big Oil or big energy interests. But when you really dig deep behind it, it's the big energy interests that are really behind things like the Copenhagen pacts and treaties to try and figure out a way that they can build a new derivative.
So true. Look, there's an article that was on our Twitter feed here, on the Truth News Twitter feed, Big Oil Behind the Copenhagen Climate Scam.
Yeah.
And this is a Prison Planet article. Quite often these articles are very well written and well researched. This one's by Paul Joseph Watson. Shell Oil and British Petroleum express their vehement support for a global carbon tax in the Copenhagen communique. Mm. The big story behind top globalists descending on Copenhagen in luxury private jets and stretch limos is not just the fact that their own behaviour completely contradicts their self-righteous hyperbole about CO2 emissions, but that their propaganda is vehemently supported by the very same big oil interests they accuse climate sceptics of pandering to. Now, let me clarify here, because it is true that ExxonMobil has funded some groups which question global warming. I've done a bit of research into this. But you've got to understand, what is ExxonMobil? Who owns ExxonMobil? Who really makes decisions? Where is the direction headed? Well, we know the Rockefeller family are the major shareholders in the organization. We know the Rockefeller family are vehemently in support of the whole carbon myth. We know that. They've gone on record for years saying that, and they've actually gone on record as being, you know, trying to convince their own board, you know, like they've gone into meetings with the board of Exxon and said, you know, you guys have got to start, you know, being better, you know, like, you know, we're just the poor little, you know, owners of your company. You see what I mean? You get the joke? I mean, you know what I mean?
I mean
like that was the way it was kind of portrayed in the media, like these poor little David Rockefeller trying to convince his own board that they have to get on board with global warming, but the big nasty board executives didn't want to go along with it. I mean, I don't think that's the way it works in the real world. I think it's the mirror opposite of that. I think the people that own, you know, 50% or more of the shares choose the direction in which organizations are going.
When you get told that we are going to tax, there's going to be a new form of money called bingles, and it's only going to be, you know, and by the way, it's going to get stripped from all of the taxpayers and given to you as a big company owner, or as you know, a board of a major company. The first thing you're going to do is say, "What, really? You're going to give us all this free money so we can bet it on the exchange and make more?" I mean, you're not going to try to withhold that. You're not going to try to stop it.
Nobody is in favour of this system. Even the Greens are against it. And even James Hansen, the grandfather of global warming, is totally against it. But don't be too comforted by that, okay? Because what these people want is a full-on carbon tax. That's what James Hansen wants, and that's what the Greens probably want, although they haven't fully spat it out yet. But they don't really like the emissions trading scheme, but I bet you they'd go along with a big fat tax that was just another tax. Now, what's actually happened in Australian politics is that the shrewd people in the Liberal Party have capitalized on this idea and have already started calling it a big tax. Okay, Tony Abbott continually calls it a new great big tax every time he talks about it.
Yeah, and you know the other thing is, and this is where I find the language is starting to get really mixed up, and the language behind climate change is always getting changed and malleable, sort of like a bit of clay. You know, the language is now. And I'm seeing this on front pages of the papers. They're saying things like this, and this is you know, this is not a direct quote, but I'm paraphrasing here. But it's something like, "Is the ETS the right thing to do? I think a carbon tax would be better."
Yeah.
So they're sort of saying like, "Oh, you know, a trading scheme isn't that good. I think a direct carbon tax would be better." When they're it is the same thing. It's the exact same thing. It's money being extracted by you, from you, violently, by the state.
Well, can I just say that money actually goes straight.
Welcome to the show, Dan Collins. Big round of applause. Dan Collins tonight, reporting to us from the studio. Continue.
Sorry, Josh. I just was trying to make the point that that money actually goes straight to corporations in the form of grants for like carbon compliance. You know, I mean, so it's basically money going straight from the taxpayer into the pockets of corporations for these, you know, Mickey Mouse projects, you know, like clean coal and, you know, carbon sequestration, you know, absolutely absurd ideas, you know, and they're just pumping billions of dollars into private corporations. I mean,
yeah. And not only that, you get, you have these beautiful, amazing forests that are these old growth forests that are getting cut down. It's already started. They're getting cut down because you don't get cash for old trees, for trees that are already in the ground. You only get carbon credits for new trees. So people are cutting down these beautiful old growth forests and planting monocultured pine.
Is that right? Where?
And getting these carbon credits. I mean, and again, this money is taken by force from, productive citizens to be pumped into these schemes that politicians think are better.
So an environmental scheme has become a license for environmental damage, yeah.
No, absolutely. And this is always what happens when you try to direct markets. No one, when you try to direct markets, it's the same, I always bring up the cane toad analogy where you bring something in to fix a problem, but you don't see all these problems that are going to happen. You can't look into the future and see the problems that are going to happen because the amazing ingenuity of people to try and get something out of nothing or to try and be greedy about something is going to screw up the system. And this is exactly another way it happens. You know, they try to do a so-called good thing, because there are a lot of people that really do believe climate change is, you know, there are a hell of a lot of people that really believe this stuff, and a lot of politicians that are just blatantly stupid because they're not looking at both sides, or they've just been their cognitive dissonance runs so deep that they refuse to.
Well, isn't it just simple greed? It's not a matter of ideology. It's just simple. They are greedy and ruthless, and they plan to be greedy and ruthless. I mean.
Yeah, I mean, I think also, I mean, on the political side, I think, these people are so deeply entrenched. I mean, I've been taught global warming stuff since primary school. I'm 32 years old. And so it's been running a long time. And when the taxpayers or the voters all sort of parrot this stuff that they've been pumped into them since primary school, the first thing the politician's going to say is, well, save my job. I don't care if I believe it or not. I'll put through this global warming tax. I mean, it's absurd. It's when people really think about it, oh my God, we are literally asking the state to steal more money off of us so they could give it to corporations that are polluting. Laughable.
Can I just say I'm impressed? I mean, it's much more impressive than 9/11 in a way. I mean, the absolute insidious, all-powerful nature of the carbon myth. I mean, it's astounding how everyone believes it and no one questions it.
I just get you to hold that thought?
Fair
because
enough.
We're going to come back to it. I want to get kind of back into the structure of the show that I had mapped out for tonight, but we'll get back to some of this. So just stand by while we segue into the next section. Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free. Okay, we're back and we are champing at the bit here, just racing into this show. We're already getting into some really interesting discussion and questions here, and I just want to point out a couple of newsworthy items here so that we get the grounding right, because climate skepticism has never had as much audience as it does now. It has never had as much voice. We are at the peak historically of questioning of global warming and
amazing,
climate orthodoxy.
Isn't it? Because
it's extremely important to realize
all
that.
These years, and they say the science has been, the science is fixed, the science is over, the science is there's a consensus. But really, the science, for the first time, the dissenting voices are for the first time for 20 years actually being heard. I mean, it's stunning.
Yeah. Now, regular listeners to this show or people who've been following the alternative blogs will understand about ClimateGate. A lot of more, standard working people and many people that I interact on a daily basis with are completely unaware of ClimateGate. I really should point that out, because a lot of people who follow the blogs think it's a huge story that everyone knows about. But a lot of people just turn a blind eye to it. And it is on the newspapers and it is being covered, but it's easy to ignore it. And a lot of people are just ignoring it. Now, of course, ClimateGate is the leaked emails, which showed a collusion, corruption, bullying tactics, people being prevented from publishing. They said they were going to redefine the peer review process, that we had Phil Jones, one of the top researchers from the Climate Research Unit, telling people to delete their emails because there might be information in there that they didn't want to have accessed. And they've been constantly and continuously refusing FOI requests for their raw data. The most basic thing is that people who are questioning this, people who are scientists, wanted to get the raw data. It's a very standard thing. And they've been continually rejected. No, you can't have... Well, they wouldn't even say that. They just wouldn't give it to them. Delay, delay, delay.
Yeah, let's not skim over this Phil Jones case. I mean, these are scientists that are the gatekeepers to the IPCC. the international intergovernmental, that's the key word right there, intergovernmental panel on climate change. Now, here we have some gatekeeper scientists telling people to delete emails that have dissenting or data that doesn't match up with the goal. Now, that's just not how science works. Science works by having a theory and then building tests to try and prove that theory. Instead, they have a goal, they have a theory, and they turn it into a goal instead. Oh, no, we're only going to take in data and manipulate the data until it fits our theory or our goal. And it's just it's rhetoric back to the old church days of where you know we try to keep the world flat because it might upset deep-seated dogma.
Now, indeed, and let me just flesh this out a bit more.
By the way, that was pagan dogma, wasn't it?
Let me just flesh this out a bit more for some of our listeners are actually not in Australia, and they may not be aware of the political situation in Australia. Climate change is at the absolute centre of Australian politics right now, and this suddenly erupted because the government that's currently in had been planning to bring in this emissions trading scheme, very similar to the one that Obama is trying to bring in the United States, and they were just trundling along towards it and thinking everything was going to be okay. The climate skeptics have always been there. They've always had all this amazing information. There's been so much of it. I mean, the leaked emails is really, to me, it's not even anywhere near the most interesting information. There's just so much good, solid scientific information that conflicts with global warming orthodoxy. Let's forget about that. Just looking at what was happening in Australian politics. And what actually happened was this ClimateGate scandal erupted with the leaked emails, just getting towards within about 6 weeks of the crucial Senate debates that were going to be held here in the nation's capital on the emissions trading scheme. And it was always known that the opposition, Conservative Party, was against some aspects of it, but it was actually their policy to go ahead with an ETS scheme. It was actually brought in by John Howard at the end of his term as a Liberal Party policy. So most people thought it was going to go ahead because the Liberal Party had already stated it as a policy. But this ClimateGate scandal is really, you've got to really understand it. And I think we need to open our minds a little to understand that what is going on here is actually potentially a really, really positive thing, a really good thing for the future of humanity. Because here's my take on it, which I propose to you, is that many, many people out there in the big wide world of all walks of life have known that there was something really dodgy about global warming for years. And they've had no voice. They've been, taxi drivers would, have been talking about it forever. Farmers have been against it. Farmers have known from the beginning it was crap.
Okay? Oh, farmers are the biggest voices against it.
Yeah. A lot of these groups are very marginalized. Farmers are very marginalized these days. Now,
is another very, very funny thing. I talk to a lot of people that are very green.
Yeah.
And a lot of them now are starting to be skeptical.
Right.
Which is very interesting because I myself, and I've said this on the show a number of times, but I myself have been a greenie my whole life, lifelong green.
Yeah.
And I think the shift to sustainable ways of living is a good thing, whether CO2 or not is a big problem. And I think we have to get away from oil and fossil fuels as fast as we can, because it's just an old way of working. I mean, who wants to breathe in carbon monoxide as cars are driving down the road? Who wants pollution? Who wants smog? I don't.
Well, I mean, the fact that they've been talking about radon, radioactive trace in fly ash from coal burning furnaces for decades. There's a lot of radioactive trace elements in fossil fuels.
Let me just continue with the latest few months of Australian politics history, because okay, so we've had this development of an awakening, a mass awakening. It was already there, but the ClimateGate scandal came at a particular point in time, And then we had very high-profile figures like Lord Monckton, who, to be honest with you, I had never heard of him before about a couple of months ago. I mean, I guess he's been around for a long time, but a lot of people have just popped out of the woodwork. And people, you know, highly educated, qualified, even, you know, people who are lords, you know, there's two actually. There's Lord Rawson and Lord Monckton. There's a lot of people with a lot of education and a lot of knowledge and even kind of kudos with previous governments who've suddenly stepped up.
You know what I want to see
up.
More of, though? You know, because, you know, Lord Monckton is an old Thatcherite. And,
oh, yes, we
know,
shouldn't. I'm not saying we should
more
trust the guy.
From the left. I want to see more people from the left coming out and being a bit more realistic about life. I'm saying, why does it all have to be these right-wing people, you know? I mean, not that I'm a right-left kind of guy. I definitely am not, you know.
But what's happened
all
is,
of that. But
yeah.
The all of society are a very much a left, you know, most of society, the TV-watching, Simpsons-watching society, really are left-right, and all they see is right-wing people like... As fantastic as he is coming out with this information, Lord Monckton.
They see him as an elitist.
But then,
yeah.
Then people say, "Oh, he's an old Thatcherite," and straight away he's you know, people drop him like a wet cloth. Why isn't there some leaders of the left who realizing that this is all a big scam?
But the point here is, I think that the media spin doctors have been spinning this as a left right issue, as if having an opinion about whether it's getting warmer or cooler has any connection to political issues of social realities of quality of life. This is just a scientific matter. Okay, so they've been spinning it as a political issue
They've certainly tried to.
Now, but what's actually happened is that this mass awakening that I think that's happened led to inundations of calls, like hundreds of thousands of people phoning into 2GB radio. And just clogging their phone lines, shutting them down about climate change, right? And guess what? The opposition knew it was happening. The opposition was aware of it. And there are all these people in the opposition, as I bet there are even in the Labour Party, who know that it's all a load of crap, right?
Yeah.
And Tony Abbott said it was a load of crap, and I'm quoting him there. I'm not just using an expletive. He actually said that, okay? But we know that Nick Minchin and a lot of these other people in the Libs are totally have schooled themselves in the climate skeptics' arguments, and I'm sure people in the Labour Party too. But the Libs are using it as a party political strategy.
He came straight out and said, "I will go to an election on this issue," and these people are. I mean, these people don't say stuff lightly. They are. Like insurance agents, they know every statistic possible about what numbers of people are saying what, because they've got very, very good analysis behind them saying, right, I think you can go ahead and do this. I think the people are behind you. So they must really know the amount of people that are saying, hey, I don't believe this. This is all a big scam.
Well, I mean,
because at the end of the day, Tony Abbott doesn't care. He doesn't.
Obviously not. But what I'm saying is, what's been pissing me off, sorry, is just how they've just married this whole carbon global warming thing with, they've married it almost inextricably with environmentalism generally. I mean, you can't think about windmills without global warming. You can't think of, you know, biofuels. You can't think of biomass. Yeah. You can't think of all these, you know, clever ideas without, you know, global warming.
Oh, very, very good point. Very good point. And this is a really kind of sick, because if, you know, it's almost impossible, exactly like you said, if you talk about windmills, oh, global warming. In fact, tonight was the first time that that I saw a news article about that big iceberg that's floating towards Australia, where at the end of the article they said, oh, this isn't. Scientists tell us that this isn't because of global warming. So, like, people, you know, for the first time, are hearing people saying that they have to specifically say this isn't because of climate change. They say climate change now, not global warming. But yeah, any new energy source, any something great that the free market's coming up with, ooh, it's all got to do with global warming. You can only push this technology on a lie. And this for me is a really, really awful situation, because I've been for the search for free energy and for alternative energy since high school. I've been pushing with engineers and people around my peers that really work hard on finding better ways with photovoltaics, living off the grid, cheap, free energy, working with you know, all sorts of crazy technologies, because I'm obsessed with how magnetics could work, how, you know, all sorts of things. But I don't want to go saying, hey, we need this because of a lie. I don't want to say, I don't want to perpetuate a lie and say, oh, that's why I'm searching for this. But that is what every single company does. That's what every single, if you look up a solar power company on the web, on their website, I can guarantee you it'll say global warming or climate change.
Carbon footprint. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying. I've, for years now, I've thought that, you know, that renewable energy can give us, you know, energy for desalinating water in the third world, you know, and you could supply third world cities with clean water using, you know, renewable energy. And you could, you know, you do away with their problems of, you know, child mortality and all that sort of thing, you know, using these ideas. But now I'm a charlatan because of them.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. Look, now let me just bring us up to date with the breaking news from today. There's a lot going on at the moment. We've got the conference in Copenhagen that's just got started. The conference is in total disarray, partly because of the climate gate issues, which are still erupting, and I've got something interesting to bring up in relation to that. Also, because of the latest uproar, is that the developing world representatives have suddenly spat the dummy because some information has been leaked. And I'll just read the story here that was a leading story tonight on most news networks. Copenhagen climate summit in disarray after document leak. The UN climate talks in Copenhagen descended into acrimony overnight after the leaking of a draft Copenhagen agreement that would require developing countries to take on targets as the world cut emissions in half by 2050. Drafted by the Danish government after talks with a so-called Circle of Commitment, creepy name, including Australian Prime Minister Kevin Rudd, the document said global emissions should peak by the end of the next decade, but did not include any emissions targets for 2020 or specific proposals for the creation of a green fund to help the most vulnerable. Control of climate change finance would be passed to the World Bank. Angry developing countries said the document was the work of rich nations who wanted to abandon the existing Kyoto Protocol, which is not mentioned in the draft, and its principle of only industrialized nations taking on emissions targets due to their historic responsibility for climate change. It prompted a furious rebuke to rich nations from China. In a surreal press conference in a cramped room next to the Chinese delegation office, chief negotiator Su Wei claimed he was unaware of the leaked Danish proposal that had hijacked the mood of the convention center while attacking the European Union, Japan, and the US for claiming they were acting on climate change while they were doing very little. Now, look, this is all a bit of a smokescreen, in my opinion, because the underlying questions are so unclear. There is so much doubt and dispute about the basis of the whole thing, that these complaints and arguments between various member states, to me, what do you know what it looks like to me? It's like when you get a bunch of crooks who get together with sort of like one group of more powerful crooks who kind of like are the insiders who control the bank, and They're teaming up with lower level crooks who are going to help with the robbery, and then suddenly the lower level crooks find that the big crooks are going to take all their share of the booty. You know what I mean? It's just, you know, thieves. I'm not talking about the average person in the developing world. I'm talking about the corrupt governments who run all of those countries, who are just going to be exploiting that with all of their business relationships, all of their nepotism. I mean, you know, it's all inherited in those, in most of those countries. It's nepotistic. The the rulers of the countries own most of the big businesses. You know, in Indonesia and the Philippines and in Malaysia and Thailand and all these countries, the ruling class who actually run everything tend to own everything as well. And of course, they're going to be the main beneficiaries of the climate scandal. And now they're getting up on their soapbox saying, "How dare you? You know, you're robbing it." The whole thing is ridiculous. Okay, I mean that's my take on it. I don't know what your take is. I mean, maybe I'm a bit jaded, a bit cynical, but that's the way I see it.
Yeah, Dan.
It's a bit of, it's turning into a joke. I mean, that's one encouraging thing that. But yeah, I mean, the question remains whether they're just going to go ahead with it anyway.
Well, that's the thing that I see. I see this is one big. At the end of the day, the banks and the corporations rule, basically use governments as the violent enforcement arm of their you know, monopolies or duopolies, and. I think this is all just a big sort of, ooh, look, we're sort of getting a choice. Ooh, look, this is democracy at play. Ooh, look, you know, and so we all feel like, oh, yeah. And I mean, same thing here with the Liberals, you know, handing down the ETS as a heap of bull. Like you said earlier, it's... you know, the Liberals actually put it as something that they wanted before in the Howard days. So we, you know, it really is something that's just this sort of, oh yeah, we're just gonna, you know, come back and forth and until we finally get it. I mean, we're going to get it because that's what the corporations want. The main thing is that we the people. As citizens, need to stop relying on governments and really rely on ourselves. Shop locally, do all that sort of stuff, and you know, fight it with your hip pocket. Don't support any of this big stuff. You know, that's all I can really say.
But the other things we in life we believe in, we think we need. You know, do we really need? You know, it's like Harewood's a big one against you know. Immunization, but you know, and that's you know, another debate. But money. You know, what do we really need money for? You know, there's all these sort of assumptions. You know, things we've been told we need about a society, and the whole carbon scam is sort of you know the veil. You know, the veil gets ripped off the Wizard of Oz occasionally, and they see the guy behind the curtain with operating the knobs and all that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, we can go down that road and say we never need money, but do we need couches? Do we need TVs? Do we need, you know, I mean, it's money is basically a thing, a piece of paper that says I owe you, and that's all it is. It's no different than a couch. It's no different than anything. It's just a thing. And it's the way that it's created, it's monopolies that's the problem. It's monopolies. And the creation of money is a monopoly, global monopoly. And that's a big problem. And,
well, look,
and
guys,
this carbon tax is going to be another monopoly based on the World Bank controlling it and the IMF.
Totally concur. However, we're going to keep going with the information stream because I want to keep going with the information that we're breaking here, the stories that we're breaking. And the questions and the deep, complex minutiae of some of these questions, political economies, you know, how we manage society, need to be addressed in good time. Now, let's just do a quick break for a song. I've got a song queued up here, and I want to get back with some new breaking information, which is quite startling, in the next section. This is Jose Gonzalez.
Southern gatherings takes from the ground. I've been thinking while assembling the nest. On the alert for any lingering threat. Building frantically without rest. Walls credenced and blocked out the sun. Caving in everyone. Darkness fell, wiped a once joyous tone. Then famished, like persist, ended eating.
Getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
Okay, we're back, back with Truth News Radio, back with Josh Jackson and Dan Collins, and your host, Herewood Fenton, for the night. We are discussing matters of world significance, and I want to move into the continuing to discuss the climate change situation, which is the whole show is really dedicated to that topic tonight, and probably will be, actually, for a while, because we've got a lot of issues to cover here. But I want to bring up a story which is pretty shocking. Okay. Now, the story was published in a website called whatsupwiththat.com, and it's some independent research done by a man by the name of Willis Eschenbach. And the title of the article is The Smoking Gun at Darwin Zero. Now, I'll just read to you the introduction to the article. It's got quite a lot of detailed data in it and analysis, so I can't sort of run through that, but I'll read you the preamble.
I just want to say,
yeah,
folks, any of these articles that we talk about are on our Twitter feed, and I really recommend that all our listeners join the Twitter feed. You can just go to twitter.com, join up for an account, and then follow us. And our name on there is Truth News Oz, O-Z, Truth News Oz, one word. And you know, you'll just, every day you'll get some amazing, amazing things. It's actually, a few of us actually put stuff on there. So it's not just coming from one person. It's a few producers here at Truth News all post to the same Twitter feed. So I really recommend it. So, yeah, sorry, I just wanted to say that. And you'll find this article, if you want to read more about the article that the smoking gun at Darwin Zero that Herod's just about to talk about, you know, on the Twitter feed, as well as the show notes at truthnews.com.au.
Yeah, in fact, I suggest very strongly to listeners that you actually go there now, pause the audio, go and get it, and get it up. So I'm going to be talking through it, and you'll be able to see the graphs, and you'll understand what I'm talking about. Because it's very important to understand this. Okay, the article begins. People keep saying, yes, the climate gate scientists behave badly. But that doesn't mean the data is bad. That doesn't mean the Earth is not warming. And this is true. I've read a lot of stories about ClimateGate where they present all this information about all of this, you know, dirty dealings and corrupt behavior, but they always say at the end, but the data is never in dispute. The data is gold. You know, the data is sacred. Okay. Well, anyway, here's the article. Let me start with the second objection first. The Earth has generally been warming since the Little Ice Age, around 1650. There is general agreement that the Earth has warmed since then. ClimateGate does not affect that. The second question, the integrity of the data, is different. People say, yes, they destroyed emails and hid from the Freedom of Information Acts, messed with the proxies, and fought to keep other scientists' papers out of the journals. But that doesn't affect the data. The data is still good.
They didn't only do that. They pushed, in some of these emails, they're saying, let's start a culture where we destroy the name of certain publications and journals that do publish the scientific papers that go against the general consensus of the IPCC or the goal of the IPCC. So they were trying to, you know, and these are big scientists. These are big name scientists. These are people that, if you want funding, you have to worship in the scientific community. Sorry.
Yeah, they did all that too. Yeah, you know, anyone who's got an eye open and a brain knows what's going on.
But I mean, regarding raw data, I mean,
let me continue. Let's continue with the article, and we can talk about it. There are three main global temperature data sets. One is the CRU, the Climate Research Unit of the University of East Anglia, where we've been trying to get access to the raw numbers. One is at NOAA/GHCN, the Global Historical Climate Network, and the final one is at NASA GISS, the Goddard Institute for Space Studies. So, get this clear. There are three sort of holy, you know, shrines of information.
Centralized information.
All information comes from one of those three sources.
Well, it's centrally gathered there.
Yeah, yes. I mean, it's centrally gathered. Of course, there are climate stations all over the world. But these are the three main nodes that basically everything gets assembled and then fed into computer programs that are run through one of these institutions, and then they feed their data to the IPCC. So, the three groups take raw data and they homogenize it to remove things like when a station was moved to a warmer location and there's a 2 degree centigrade jump in the temperature. The three global temperature records are usually called CRU, GISS, and GHCN. Both GISS and CRU, however, get almost all their raw data from GHCN. Interesting. All three produce very similar global historical temperature records from the raw data. So, I'm still on my multi-year quest to understand the climate data. You never know where this data chase will end. This time it has ended me up in Australia. I got to thinking about Professor Wibjorn Karlen's statement about Australia that I quoted. Another example, and this is a quote here from another researcher, professor. It says here, GHCN only presents three stations covering the period of 1897 to 1992.
GHCN is NASA.
GHCN is the Global Historical Climate Network. NASA is the GISS. That's the Goddard Institute for Space Studies. Now, this guy's in question, the professor in question, is looking at Australia, and he's questioning NASA's... Oh, hang on, NASA GHCN. He said NASA GHCN in brackets. I think that's because NASA gets its data from GHCN anyway. GHCN seems to be the one that gets most of the data first, and then they feed it on to the other ones.
Okay.
So that's interesting. So he's saying that they only present three stations covering the period 1897 to 1992. If any trend, it is a slight cooling. However, if a shorter period from 1949 to 2005 is used, the temperature has increased substantially. the Australians have many stations and have published more detailed maps of changes and trends. Now, the folks at CRU told Wibjorn that he was just wrong, and here's what they said is right. The record that Wibjorn was talking about is the UN IPCC Fourth Assessment Report showing Northern Australia. And there's a little graph here that shows a temperature record from around about 1900 to the year 2000. And you can see in that graph it's going up. It's certainly going up quite dramatically there towards the end of the century.
Now, but 98, around 98,
it goes into a pretty sharp climb there. Now, the black line is observations. Okay. One of the things that was revealed in the released CRU emails is that the CRU basically uses the Global Historical Climate Network dataset for its raw data. So, I looked at the GHCN dataset. There I find three stations in Northern Australia, as Wibjorn had said, and nine stations in all of Australia that cover the period from 1900 to 2000. And then he presents an average of the GHCN unadjusted data for those three northern stations from AIS. That's the first graph he presents. Now, if you're looking at this and following me, you can see this graph, well, it certainly doesn't show any warming. It actually shows, if you go back to 1880, we've got cooler. I mean, it's clearly got cooler since 1880. There was a decline from 1880 down to about 1900, and it stabilized a bit. Then from 1920, it dipped again to 1940. 1950, it kind of reached a low point, and then it started climbing again. And and then it just wiggles. I mean, there's this, you certainly wouldn't say it was warming. And if you looked at it just at a glance, you'd say it looks like there's been a decline. That's what it looks like, a decline. Okay. Okay, now this is the same three data sets. These are very important to remember this. These are the same three weather stations that the Global Historical Climate Network had presented this other graph, which shows a completely different view. So if you just scroll up again, you see the one there with the black line going up at the end?
Mm.
Okay, so now the object of this article is to try and find out what's going on here, okay? So then he continues his investigation, and he starts off by saying, well, this looks nothing like the corresponding IPCC temperature record for Australia. Professor Carlin is only showing three stations. That's not a lot of stations. But then that's all the century-long Australian records we have in the IPCC specified region. Okay, we've seen the longest stations record, so let's throw more records into the mix. Here's every station in the UN IPCC specified region, which contains temperature records that extend up to the year 2000, no matter when they started, which is 30 stations. Now, that's the next graph, which contains a lot more stations in it, but as you get earlier in time, there's less stations. So if you go back to 1880, there's probably only the three, but as you go further forward, there's more. Now, still no similarity with the IPCC. So I looked at every station in the area. That's 222 stations. Here's the result. It's incredible. I mean, this is just, it's mind-boggling. It's spine-tingling. I mean, look at that graph. It's a flat line that still has this peak, this high at the beginning, and goes into a flat line with a little bit of a peak and then a drop again towards the end of the century. There's just nothing in there that you look at it and go, wow, there's a major temperature increase. There's variability. Of course there's variability. We've got to remember that the whole IPCC global warming scam is based on this hockey stick at the very end. There's got to be the hockey stick at the very end. That's what they base everything on. And so if you don't see the hockey stick at the end, suddenly nothing that they say makes sense anymore. Okay. So, let's continue. So you can see why Bjorn was concerned. This looks nothing like the UN IPCC data, which came from the CRU, which was based on the GHCN data. Why the difference? The answer is, all these graphs use the raw GHCN data, but IPCC uses the adjusted data. GHCN adjusts the data to remove what it calls inhomogeneities. So on a whim, I thought I'd take a look at the first station on the list, Darwin Airport, so I could see what an inhomogeneity might look when it was at home. And I could find out how large the adjustment was. Well, what is an inhomogeneity? Let's find out, because there's a description here, definition. Most long-term climate stations have undergone changes that make a time series of their observations inhomogeneous. There are many causes for the discontinuities, including changes in instruments, shelters, the environment around the shelter, the location of the station, the time of the observation, and the method used to calculate mean temperature. In other words, shit happens, okay? Thermometers get moved, buildings get built, generators get stuck next to thermometers, all kinds of crazy things happen, okay? And you've got to adjust for that, okay?
Well, I'm not sure it happens that often.
From time to time, it might happen. And they should adjust for it. You know, they should adjust for it in a proper way, in a correct way, of course.
In principle.
In principle, yeah.
Have you ever been to Darwin?
No, we'll get on to that in a sec. Okay. Now, as the author of this article is saying, that makes sense. The raw data will have jumps from station moves and the like. We don't want to think it's warming just because the thermometer was moved to a warmer location. Unpleasant as it seems, we have to adjust for those as best we can. Now, he starts.
But they have fixed official procedures for placing weather stations. They've got they have guidelines and regulations about the way weather stations are supposed to be designed. I mean, I don't think these homogeneities are going to come up that often. I mean,
that's probably a really important point, actually. Anyway, we'll just continue with this. We're almost finished. I always like to start with the rawest data so I can understand the adjustments. At Darwin, there are 5 separate individual station records that are combined to make up the final Darwin record. These are the individual records of stations in the area, which are numbered 0 to 4. And there's another graph here. It's a bit more complicated, but it's got the data sets from 4 separate individual monitoring stations in there. Now, Darwin does have a few advantages over other stations with multiple records because there is a continuous record from 1941 to the present. Okay. There is also a continuous record covering a century. And finally, the stations are in very close agreement over the entire period of the record. In fact, where there are multiple stations in operation, they are so close that you can't see the records behind them in the graph. In other words, 4 different stations in Darwin, total agreement with each other. So that kind of rules out issues of where they move the thermometer and all these different things, because 4 separate monitoring stations in the same city all agreeing with each other.
That's not a big surprise, is it?
Well, it's good. It's a good sign. It means that there's integrity there, you know. I mean, if one of them was way out from the others, you'd have to say, well, there's something wrong there.
Yeah, you know what I mean? You'd have to say, it's next to and this is what they found with some of the stations in the States, is that, you know, it's sitting right next to an air conditioning duct, or it's sitting on black bitumen, which gets a lot more urban, what they call urban heating.
Yeah, but I mean, they must have regulations to look into that, surely. I mean, a weather station has to have a roof.
They don't.
What?
They readjust for this sort of stuff. So they say they adjust for the urban heat phenomena and stuff.
But does this raw data exist anywhere? I mean, has it all? I'm just getting worried whether you can actually find any raw data anymore. Whether it's all been buried.
Well, this article purports to have accessed that raw data. So, based on trusting that, we follow his methodology.
I mean, like the Russian Weather Institute, they must have pen and paper records going back, decades. I mean, you'd have to scan them in or something.
Okay, now we're just getting to the really crucial part of this. We're talking about now the adjustment that was made. And the next graph down is titled Possible Adjustment to the Darwin Station Data. Now, what he's done here is he's done a proposed adjustment to the Darwin Station data. And I don't necessarily endorse what he's doing there any more than I would endorse what the IPCC's doing. But then again, I'm not a climate scientist. But as far as I can see, the idea that you would need to adjust the data just because you thought that it had, a sudden change in it, that doesn't sound right to me. That doesn't sit right with me. Does it sit right with you?
You'd have to if you wanted to propose some kind of inhomogeneity to explain it, you'd really, really have to prove your case. Otherwise, it's a scientific phenomenon, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I'll just summarize what he's saying in the rest of this article, because he's giving you two possible ways that you could adjust the data. And one of them is basically adjusting it like this to bring this down, right? To bring that higher level down. And the other one is to do what the IPCC did, was to push the tail end of it up. Well, the IPCC pushed the tail end of it right up. What they ended up with actually was this graph here, which is the...
They're lying, yeah.
Which is just like a... It's just unbelievable. It's actually what they've proposed.
Explain it for the radio.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's...
Well, they've got a step function. They've just added this step function in, I'll tell you, that step function doesn't represent any real-world phenomenon.
Yeah, I mean, Dan's got some knowledge of mathematics and science. And, what they've done there is just... I mean, when you look at the raw data and then look at what they've done with it, I don't think you need to be a scientist or a climate scientist to be able to make a call on this. And that's why I'm doing this tonight on this show. Because, a lot of people are going to say, oh, I'm not an expert, I can't have an opinion. You can have an opinion. Read the article. I read through the whole thing today while I was at work, okay? It astounded me. It blew my mind, because they've just adjusted this thing in the most egregious way, in the most extreme way. And what he's basically saying here, after he goes through some of the various options, he's basically saying, why would you even need to adjust it? Because we saw those four charts from Darwin were all in agreement with each other. Four separate stations were in agreement with each other. So you're just saying they're all wrong? I mean, you can't do that. You can't just make a global assumption when you've only got a very small data set to start off with, to say that one part of your data set is all wrong just because you didn't like the shape of the graph. I mean, that's what they've done. They didn't like the shape of the graph. They said this part of it's wrong. We'll just pull that down and we'll correspondingly pull the other end up.
Yeah, instead of averaging it out or...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fraud. People, it's a simple fraud. I mean, you... I mean, why would the average, what reason would you expect to put these series of steps in showing a rise? If you put these series of steps in showing a rise, then the end product is going to be a graph of temperatures which shows a rise. Garbage in, garbage out.
Yeah.
Now, just the guy who wrote this is very methodical, very cautious, and in no way fanatical in what he's saying. And I'll just read you a couple of points he's making here. I'm left with an unsolved mystery. How and why did the GHCN adjust Darwin's historical temperature to show radical warming? Why did they adjust it stepwise? Do Phil Jones and the CIU use the adjusted or the raw data set? My guess is the adjusted one, since it shows warming. But of course, we still don't know. Because despite all of this, the CIU still hasn't released the list of data that they actually use, just the station list. This is the other issue that's really, really important to understand. The CIU has not released their information, and it's under FOI request. They have to, by law, release it, and they have not released it. So this question cannot be resolved until they release their data.
That's a very good article. I mean, it just simply shows that it's almost like a smoking gun. I mean, the fact is, if you add a rise into the original data, you're going to get a rise at the end.
Right.
You've got what you wanted to see.
Yeah. Now, just to finish it off, he says here, what this does show is... No. What I want to be clear about is this. The blatantly bogus GHCN adjustment for this one station does not mean that the Earth is not warming. It also does not mean that the three records, CRU, GISS, and GHCN, are generally wrong either. This may be an isolated incident.
I don't know. I don't think so.
But what this does show is that there is at least one temperature station where the trend has been artificially increased to give a false warming where the raw data shows cooling. Okay, and just let me just say that again. What this does show is that there is at least one temperature station where the trend has been artificially increased to give a false warming where the raw data shows cooling. I rest my case, Your Honour.
In the Herald Sun today, we get a an article saying Aussies swelter through the hottest 6 months on record. And the article goes on to say Australia has recorded the hottest 6 months ever, and is well on track to have the second hottest year since records began. The Bureau of Meteorology said. The World Meteorological Organization's annual climate statement released at Copenhagen found temperatures in 2009 reached 0.44 Celsius above the 1961 and 1990 annual average. The decade, 2000 to 2009, is very likely, they say, very likely to be the warmest on record. So, first of all, they're saying it is the hottest on record, and then they say it's very likely.
Yeah, that's always interesting, isn't it, when they do that? I mean, is it or isn't it?
Well, you could add some numbers in to make it like that.
Well, and where do they get this data from? What is it?
They make it up. Sorry,
we've just gone through this whole thing of what you're talking about, where they have to adjust for this and that, and then they do this and then do that. Why?
Can I just personally explain something? I step back from the whole climate change debate. And, you know, I used to read, like, medieval novels. And, like, in the Middle Ages, you know, like, England was warm and they used to grow wine, you know. And Leif Erikson went to, you know, to Greenland and founded colonies in Greenland. And it was a lot warmer back then. You know what I mean? It was a lot warmer back then. And, you know, they didn't have a problem, you know.
No.
And they keep on talking about it's going to get warmer, you know. You know, we're going, you know, back to the future. But, you know, they didn't have a problem then. I mean...
No.
Okay, what they say about that, because I've done some investigations into this, the IPCC position on that is that the medieval warming period was a regional effect. Now, most people are actually not even aware that there was a medieval warming period. But when people are made aware of it, they always qualify it by saying, oh, it was a regional
effect. This is the very, very region which we're talking that Al Gore picked on to say was going to end the world. This was Greenland, where all the ice is melting, right? And it's going to drown us all. This is Greenland. This is the Gulf Stream, which is going to be affected and we're all going to die. This is precisely the area, the region he's talking about.
Look,
you see what I'm saying?
Let's get some common sense back into this whole discussion, okay? Because we live on a fairly large planet, okay? It's big. It's a huge rock in space spinning on its axis and going around the sun. And guess what? The temperature is different in every part of that planet. You know, every part of it has a different temperature. And guess what? It gets hot in the day and cold at night. And it gets cold in winter and again, it's warm in summer, right? And it's cool as you get north to the south, it gets cooler and it's warmer around the equator. Do you really think you can just take the temperature of the planet? I mean, think about it. Can you really take the temperature of the planet? The planet is this giant system that has all of these vast processes going on that create localized conditions which are completely different in every part of it.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's not to say that over hundreds of thousands of years you can't see a pattern. You do. You do see ice ages, and you can say it was on the average much colder 20,000 years ago. We know that because we know that the whole of North America was covered in ice. Okay, so on average, it was a lot colder.
So regional effect? Regional
well, you could say it was regional because the equator was still very warm.
Yeah, they're saying that, ooh, Australia is the hottest on record now. Is that not regional? You know, they say
yeah,
regional
exactly.
for when it suits them, and then they don't say regional when it doesn't suit them. Look, I'm not saying, and this is the thing about this show, and I really want to reiterate, we need alternative energy sources. We need to be futuristic and let our creativity spill, but not through the pillaging of the middle class and the starvation of the third world. Because, yeah, we might start scratching as soon as when these sort of taxes come through. The middle class of the Western civilized countries, we might do a little bit worse. But when you are almost death's door in the third world country, a little bit worse is death.
Yeah, you're right.
And you know, that is the issue. That is the issue here. For millions, actually more population than there are in the civilized, well, you know, the first world countries.
Well, sure, added to the amount that, you know, like Western corporations are, you know, screwing over the third world, you know, and raping them of their resources and settling them in huge debt and, you know, giving them starting civil wars and, you know, and just, I mean, added to that, they want to, like, tax them for, you know, making carbon. Yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing we've got to realize here, folks, and this is really poignant, to get away from all this geekiness, just to get down to the core principles of it. When you tax, when you give money to me for planting 1,000 trees, what I'm doing is, well, actually, first of all, you're not giving it to me. It's being stolen from you by the point of a gun and given to me, because if you don't pay it, you go to jail. Now, it's being given to me. I reap the money for planting trees to basically sell back to you oxygen. What I'm doing is selling you oxygen. And this is the thing. We all think about, oh, no, we're going to pay for carbon. No, what you're paying for, folks, is oxygen.
Oxygen tax, yeah.
You are actually, you know, this whole thing, and my grandpa said, oh, one day they'll tax the air we breathe. And that is exactly what is happening right now. And because people sort of think only about the carbon dioxide. People only think about the carbon dioxide. But what they are doing is selling you back oxygen. Because they are planting the trees, because you're using so someone plants a whole heap of trees, that's using up, so they're using up less dioxide than you because they've planted more trees, and what they're selling back to you is the surplus of oxygen that they've created. So they're creating a market for oxygen here, and this is the sickest thing that you could ever do, because if you do not pay for your oxygen, then you will be thrown in prison, or
but
you'll
this,
be
this outcome that you were raising before, where millions of people could die, and you know that could already be happening because of the biofuels.
Oh, in Haiti, it has. People are starving to death in Haiti.
That the extreme environmentalists would say that's a good thing because it's saving Gaia. You know, it's all about Gaia, the Earth Mother, and we have to reduce the population.
They're offering up human sacrifices to their god.
And so, ironically, and I don't, you know, we can argue till the cows come home about whether this is a secret plan by the Illuminati to depopulate the Earth, but it's certainly, a lot of people want to think that, you know, lots of people, you know, disappearing off the planet is just this great, great outcome. And we've really got to change the way people think about that. I'd like to just dedicate the rest of my life and this show and everything I do to changing people's opinion about that one thing. Because as long as people have that view, we are doomed. It's a death view. It's a death cult view. It's very similar to some views that the Nazis had, you know. It's worse, actually. I think this is actually worse than anything that's ever happened in history, and it can lead to a much worse catastrophe. People, we have to educate people out of that.
Reiterate here that it is not the death of people that will save the planet. It is the death of top-down control. It is the obliteration of that and letting the true creativity of people, because I can tell you, most people, more than 50%, would want to do good things for our environment, for Gaia, for the Mother Earth. That because Mother Earth does, it sustains us. Mother Earth is what sustains us through the fish and the food and the plants and the air and everything. And if we keep stuffing up and deforesting, yeah, that's going to really do us harm. I mean, we can't keep polluting the planet. We can't keep having oil spills.
What do you mean
and,
we?
I mean, putting arsenic into rivers.
What do you mean we? We're not doing it. It's the corporations that are doing that.
Yeah, but this is the thing. This is the exact same thing. This is what I'm saying. You do not need to kill off people. We need to kill off the systematic use of violence with government and corporations taking control of communities, and we need to become smarter. We need to become more wealthy in our knowledge and in the way we do things, and not by having less people on the planet, but by having smarter people, by using our brains more, by waking up, not by being asleep, by having more information about things, by having a freer market that lets us label products non-GMO or GMO, you know, not having this control. You know, they're actually trying to pass laws saying you are not allowed to say GMO free.
It's disgusting.
You know, I mean, this is just mucking around. I mean, you know, first they say, oh, no, you're not allowed to say GMO. That you know, they try to pass this law saying you have to state whether you're GMO. And that didn't get through because they stopped that. So people went, oh, well, let's just name our stuff GMO free because the market wants it. The market wants to know. But instead, now they're fighting to try and keep the fact that any company that grows some GMO-free corn can't put GMO-free on there. So these are the sorts of things that need to be battled, not, you know, mass murder of huge populations.
Oh, yeah, can I just say, I bought some seeds. I've been putting in some veggies lately, and I bought a pack of seeds from the this shop. And I put them in, tomato seeds, you know, and not a single seed came up.
Really?
Not a single. There was one kind of, one of them shot up to this kind of, you know, abortion of a plant, but like tiny abortion of the tiniest little seedling, you know, smaller than your fingernail, and the rest of them didn't come up at all.
Now, when I buy seeds, I always buy organic heirloom seeds. It's very, very important. This is one of the most important industries, free market industries, is try and get heirloom organic seeds that aren't death cult seeds, because, you know, this sort of anti-life market that's sprung up through this GMO stuff is really, really awful. And We Are Change done a great movie night with the World According to Monsanto movie.
Yeah, that was a great one. Yeah.
But doesn't GMO food have to be actually like grown from cuttings, because the seeds aren't viable?
Sorry, I didn't catch that.
The seeds aren't viable. I mean, don't they have to grow them from cuttings or something?
Oh, yeah, there's major problems with it. Look,
anyway,
can we just take a break here? Well, can we take a quick break? Because I need to make some announcements for some upcoming events related to Sydney. So let's just pause for some announcements. Look, this show goes to air tonight, of course, on Wednesday, and we've got two events which are relevant to our listeners coming up. One on Friday, we have the 11th of every month 9/11 protest, and that's spearheaded by John Bursell, who'll be down there as always at Town Hall. So if you do get this podcast before Friday and you have a chance, make sure you get down to Town Hall, because it'll be fun. And we'll all be meeting as well at the end of the day. For those who can't make it to the protest, we'll all be meeting at the Edinburgh Castle Hotel for Christmas drinks, for Truther Christmas drinks. So it's a great chance to kick back and get together with some like-minded folk.
If you're sick of talking to colleagues that write you off some nut and you just can't get through to people, there's a whole heap of people there that you can talk to and feel like finally I can have a conversation, get past the typical roadblocks, you know. And that's one thing that's really nice in some of these meetings, these We Are Change meetings and stuff, is you can have conversations that go a lot deeper because you're not just repeating the same stuff you repeat to people that are very new to this information. You know, I always find you get the same questions and when you talk to new people, whereas when you talk to the old hats, you get to really explore new areas of information and delve closer to what we all want, and that's truth, I guess.
Yeah, well put. So yeah, that'll be a good night, and on the following day, there's a separate event which has been organised by a few other people in the truth community here, and which is also being promoted at wearechange.org.au, which is a protest against the Walk Against Warming protest. So I'm calling it the Walk Against Warming, which is going to be taking place at Martin Place at 1 p.m. this Saturday, the 12th of December. So if you actually go to wearechange.org.au, you should be able to find a link there. Just hang on a sec while I get this up on my screen. You'll get a link there on the wearechange.org.au site to the meetup group, which we've created for We Are Change events. And actually, you'll see the 9/11 Truth Rally there. And you'll also see the 9/11 Truth Rally. And more meetups coming. Walk Against Warming, the debate isn't over. So, now this is going to be fun, and it's different to anything we've done before. First time we've got together to talk about climate change with the general public. It's going to be at 1 p.m. Saturday, 12th of December at Martin Place. And you can find the information there. You can look at the official Walk Against Warming website. Now, if you come, bear in mind, there'll be climate change believers there. People who are deeply, deeply immersed, deep believers that we're in terrible trouble because of climate change, that it's caused by human activity, that it's caused by CO2, that we need to have, you know, trading schemes or emissions taxes and all these things. And, you know, these activists will be there, and, you know, they're not going to be very friendly to what we have to say. But there's going to be enough of us there that we're going to be able to make a presence. We're going to have a significant presence there. And it will get people thinking. It'll be really interesting.
You know what I think we should do? I think we should all wear, like, you know, CO2 is not a poison. And all, you know, basically put bandages over our mouths like we've been silenced. And not talk, and have a silent vigil where we all just sort of sit there peacefully. Because, you know, I think it could get extremely violent. Some of these people are extremists. And it would be sort of Gandhi-esque of us to sit there with big banners, you know, to say our message in that way. But I'm just trying to think of a way that's not too... Because I feel like it could blow up because some of these people will be highly passionate.
Look, I think it's really important to... and I think when we do these kind of events, we should actually have briefing sessions before we do them. And we haven't really had time to organize that. And I'd like to, in the future, try and organise that when we're going to do a street action of some kind, we have a briefing session before the event that everyone who wants to come to the event has to come to. That we, you know, strongly recommend that if you want to do this, come to the briefing event first. That's the way Greenpeace does it. You know, these professional activist organisations always do that. And quite often they keep it secret. When they're doing something big, and they get their people in, and they have a session where they discuss what they're going to do, and they hand out all the T-shirts, you know, they get all the T-shirts printed, and then everyone turns up and has the T-shirt on, and, you know, they make their statement. But, you know, we've got to do things like that.
I think this next one is very important. I think we should get in, definitely get some emails out to the Climate Skeptics Party, get an email out on their list. I think the more people that can come along to this to really show some numbers, and folks, don't be scared. You know, the more people we have, the more we stick together, and there won't be, you know, you'll be fine. So even if you have not too much knowledge of the science, but you've heard it all, but you can't regurgitate it well, you feel like you can't regurgitate it well, don't be scared, because there's a lot of very good people that are going to be here that can.
Indeed. And I should point out that this was organized by Phil Davis, who runs the Truth Movement Australia group here in Sydney, but he's very very closely on board with We Are Change as well. And he's actually done this once before, and he said he had some really good results. He actually turned up at one of these events with a smaller group of people, and he said that he got a lot of people talking, because they turned up and they were organized, and the people who were at the event thought that they were from the climate change group, and because they arrived early, and then they started talking to the people, and then they realized they weren't. But you know, it wasn't too bad. Like the way he described it, it sounded like, you know, it wasn't confrontational, and it got a lot of people thinking. So I want to keep it on that level. I don't want to be confrontational. I'm happy to just walk away from confrontation. But we, you know, just want to basically try and, you know, be there. I mean, you know, the point of...
Look, the good thing about this is that there's going to be press there. And
yeah.
Press love confrontation. They love it when there's another side. And I can guarantee you that they will show us if we're there in numbers.
Well, it's a real pity we don't have T-shirts, because that would be really powerful. Mm. And I think we've got to get organized, and we've got to start doing these things.
Well, it's
properly.
All about money, folks. And, you know, money, if you guys want to donate, if our listeners wish to donate to We Are Change or Truth News Radio Australia, we definitely account for everything, that every bit of money that comes through from donations is all put, none of it's put into private pockets to go and, you know, drink champagne and buy, you know, French furniture. It's all put directly into actions.
Yeah, I don't have any French furniture.
Into
I just buy designer jeans. That's all.
Yeah, designer jeans.
Yeah.
But it literally is where people in this movement put in a lot of money of their own money to fund
T-shirts
and banners and
massive
stuff.
Amounts.
None of it is corporately paid for. So it's really important that people do pledge some money to help us do things like that, because you know, not only do we give up our precious time, but we also you know, we also, a lot of people put in all their own money. So
now, let me just recap here, because I've just been waiting for this page to load. This is the TMA Walk Against Global Warming page. What Phil has proposed here is that we should wear red clothing and red shoelaces to make it clear that we are not stupid, and we will not let this tax scam unfold. Red to represent the sun and its impact on Earth's temperatures, not man-made CO2. Wear red shirts, red hats, red everything. So that's at least one option, is to wear red. I've got a red T-shirt. I think it's a good idea, because yep. they will be wearing blue. So we can wear red. Now, I should also point out the various truth groups in Sydney. You know, truth group is a weird way of describing it, but you know, we're part of a new social phenomenon, and we use the word truth to kind of show how we're similar or connected to each other. There's a lot of different groups that have formed, and I'm involved in a cooperative joint venture with some of these groups to set up what is to be called the Truth HQ. And it's a really interesting experiment. It's kind of an experiment in democracy as well, because we've all got very different aims. I mean, we've got different things that really dominate our minds. I mean, there's the Zeitgeist movement, which, you know, I'm not really on board with the Zeitgeist ideas, but the Zeitgeist movement supports the same things that I support about truth and accountability. And the guy who's running that, David's been very supportive and very helpful, and he's a bright lad. So, you know, I'm interested in, you know, working with him. We've got Phil Davis, who runs TMA in Sydney. yeah, he's very organized, very committed activist, and really, really great guy. We've got another lady, Anastasia, who runs a group called the Law and Sovereignty Group, and that's actually one of the biggest groups, and they get like regular meetings of like 30 people turning up, and they're the ones that are kind of looking at. They're trying to create human freedom. I still have yet to go to one of their group meetings, and I probably not going to explain it very clearly, but there's a lot of stuff on the internet about this. It's about the free man, straw man concept, and people basically freeing themselves from the construct of the person as it's been defined by our system, while continuing to function within the system. And a lot of it seems to be what they do is they're trying to redefine language. They're trying to create a new language, which doesn't imply the kind of forms of ownership and slavery that are in the way we currently think. So those are the four main groups that are coming together at present. And of course, John Bursell and the Truth Action Australia is another one. So that's actually five. And if you look at if you consider Truth News Radio and We Are Change as kind of one entity, we consider the Zeitgeist Movement as another entity. We see TMA as another entity, and we see the 9/11 Truth Movement as a separate entity. So at the moment, the Truth HQ will be an opportunity for people to have a meeting space and a place to plan activities. And currently it's Esperanto House, which is in Redfern. I don't think it's the long-term ideal spot, but it's fine for now. And it's got a good space. And we are going to be holding meetings there. And there is one scheduled for mid-January for We Are Change. And I'm going to be... actually trying to get everyone to come to that, because we're actually going, that's the one we're going to actually have as an open public meeting where we present the Truth HQ to the general public, kind of like a town hall meeting. You know, it's like all truth seekers welcome to come, no charge, come and have your say, have some input into it. And then after that, we have a barbecue and a few beers and a relax. So that's going to be about, we've scheduled that, I think, for the 16th of January.
Yeah, and we will definitely not be talking about Tiger Woods.
Well, look, I don't mind talking about Tiger Woods after, all the other issues have been discussed, but that's going to take a while.
It's really important to talk about someone we've never met and never will meet about his love affair. I think it's something we definitely need to, who has no real issue, no real consequence on life or my life, but we should be, we should have done a whole show about it today because he really has no consequence on anything. So it's really important to discuss that.
I don't know if you picked up on the guy who was writing the article about Jan Utzon and the story we did, the breaking story that we did, the amazing story that we broke about Jan Utzon. And the story that he wrote didn't go to press, but the one that did was a lover's romp in the clock tower at down on Crown Street. It's a hotel down there that has a clock tower in it. And he wrote this amazing investigative report on this lover's romp. As you could see, a man and a woman naked in the clock tower. And that was a huge story.
Mm. Yeah, so instead of covering the Jan Utzon story, they ditched that and went with some people making love in a clock tower, in public.
It was pretty
interesting. Well, kind of in public, sort of out of view, but, and it's, so important to talk about there, And they were going to hunt them down and find the perpetrators and all this rubbish. It's just extraordinary what our press has turned into. It really is.
It certainly is.
That's why Truth News Radio Australia, we dig deeper and further. We pass through the spin and the lies, and we try to, we don't always have the truths. That's why it's called Truth News, because we try to get close to it, and we always ask our listeners to please come and rebut what we have to say. If they've got some new information or we've said something wrong, please go to truthnews.com.au, leave a comment,
Yeah, rebut away. We love being rebutted. Rebut us.
Yeah, rebut us. And sponsor us if you can find it in your hearts to even a little bit would help us print signs or whatever else.
Absolutely.
Or join up to the Twitter feed, twitter.com/truthnewsoz. Now, you can also, if you're not a member of Twitter, you can just subscribe to the RSS feed of our Twitter feed onto your Google homepage, so you always see our latest Twitter updates on your iGoogle homepage.
Thanks so much for that. We're going to have to wind it up.
Yep. And also, one last thing is leave a comment on iTunes and give us a 5-star rating. Tell all your friends to subscribe to iTunes. Just type in Truth News into your iTunes search bar, and you'll get us up there as well. So I think that's the sort of stuff we need to do as listeners.
Absolutely. And on that note, we're going to say goodnight. It's been a fantastic show. Thanks so much, Dan Collins. Thanks so much, Josh Jackson. And thanks, Australia, and the world. Good night.